This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Hey, good Monday to you. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Back here on a Monday. I'm glad Denton Day and John Stasher, I want to thank both of them for filling in for me while I was away on surgery. But back to work as we get ready to go for this rest of the week. And boy, oh boy, the Russell Wilson drama in Seattle is getting real. There are now teams being mentioned as possible landing spots. You know, this is weird. This is like when you're kind of like, you think you're going through a divorce and you're not, but you're not sure. And all of a sudden, like, imagine if you were in that limbo stage. You're like, I think I could salvage this marriage. But then all of a sudden she brings home like apartment guides or real estate brochures. And you're thinking, oh no, this is real. Oh, this is the process. This is Russell Wilson's camp getting it out there that he's not happy. And this is where he would like to go. And Seattle has to play this game a little bit. We'll actually go through some of the dynamics of this to see if this will actually go through. It is actually bizarre when you think about it. There's two quarterbacks, both superstars, could be in different spots this season, which is something you just do not see in this league at all. Heck, it would be amazing if Deshaun Watson got moved. If Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson both got moved, boy, the leverage quarterbacks are going to start to gain in this league. It's going to be like any slight that you have a problem with your quarterback could result in this kind of drama. Also, the 17-week NFL season that is being talked about this upcoming year, which is very, very likely to happen, it's got some twists in it that are actually kind of beneficial to us fans. We'll go over that as well. I did have a chance because I had nothing else to do but lay on the couch and recover. I watched a lot of Big Ten basketball, and boy, it's fun, and I've already got a team that I'm really looking forward to this coming up, because now that we've reached March, all the madness and fun gets to start. But we're going to start by talking about the Tiger tributes yesterday. They were fantastic as a number of golfers began, you know, wore red yesterday in the final round of the World Golf Championship in Florida. What he means to them is so different to other golfers who have played the game. And we'll talk about that coming up, because we are still processing the Tiger Woods accident from Tuesday of last week. It's all coming up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call here on a Monday morning. Hey, trade up any non-contact thermometer for a $5 rebate towards an Exergen purchased at any retailer. Accuracy matters more than ever when taking temperature, and published research shows non-contact models miss 5 out of 6 fevers. Upgrade to Exergen, the only home forehead thermometer proven accurate by published peer-reviewed clinical studies. Details at Exergen.com. All right, so again, thanks to Denton Day and John Stashauer for filling in for me. It was a little longer than I thought, the knee surgery that I had. I thought it would be quick and easy, and I ended up having a little bit more complications, so I had to stay out for 3 days last week.
Boo. Much to,
yeah, my wife was like, all right, you're done. I'm going to sit on the couch, elevate the leg, don't do anything. And it was kind of cool, but it was like at the same time I was getting really like – I was getting tired of watching television and – going, you know, just getting, I was like so restless.
No,
I couldn't
first,
take it.
I think it would have, the first day, you're like, oh, okay, I could do this.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And,
yeah.
Then, and then day two comes along, you're like, oh, this is kind of old. Day three, you're like, oh, I'm done.
Yeah. So they were supposed to do a small meniscus repair, and ended up having bone chips that they had to remove. So it required like more elevation and more time and all that stuff. So it was, I'm glad it's over. Although we were talking before the show, anesthesia is amazing. I mean, it really, I don't have a lot of surgeries. Like, listen, I know I'm one of those people that gets amazed by things when I don't experience it. And then people go, oh, yeah, everybody knows that. I go, yeah, but I don't, because I don't have a lot. Like, the last surgery I had was 2007. That might as well have been dinosaurs roaming the earth, for crying out loud, right?
Well, that's what
that might as well have been leeches and pit, you know, torches and witchcraft. I mean, that was the last time I had any surgery.
Mine was way back in 95, 1995.
Exactly. So for me, like, when they wheeled me in and then they said, here's the gas, boom. And I was like, it's instantaneous. I don't remember anything. That's amazing. Like, I know I said this when I fell, I said, boy, I would not have survived as a Civil War soldier.
Yeah.
Because, like, they had to give me all these drugs, like, pop my knee back into place because I had severe dislocation. And I remember going, boy, if I was in the Civil War and they were like, just cut it off, I would have been freaking out. That's why I'm so glad to be alive at this time where they just went, gas, do the surgery, you don't even know, and then off you go.
You're done.
Like, you're done. That's it. Like, instead, like, back in the day, like, in the Westerns, they would have just given me a whole bunch of alcohol, and I would have just drank it until I was oblivious to the world.
That, and they would have made you bite down on a stick.
Bite down on a stick or a leather belt or something. Yeah, it's great. Absolutely great. Just wheeled in. Here's the gas mask. In a split second, the lady was going, well, wake up. Good. Glad you came back. You're doing good. That was it. Boom. Done. Finished. So then I got in the car, went home, and was pretty much babied by my wife.
That's the other thing, too. I mean, you get sent home the same day.
I know. Exactly.
Like, I think in the past it was like, no, you got a minimum of 3 days in the hospital.
Because we had these ice storms in Nashville, so they were saying how they were backed up. So I'm sure they were like, yep, go ahead, get going. Yeah, your wife's here. Goodbye. Thank you. Goodbye. Yeah, we'll call you later to see how you're following up. But see ya. Get out of here. If you can hurry up and get dressed, that'll be great. Yeah, basically me. Wednesday. So yesterday, the World Golf Championship being played in Bradenton, a number of golfers wore the traditional red in honor of Tiger Woods, who I didn't get to talk about at all. Because
no, you missed it.
Tuesday.
It's old news now.
Now it's old news. But the tributes were good to wear the red. You know, I was thinking about this because, you know, I've been spending a lot of time thinking about Woods and reading a lot about Woods and you know, his accident and what it means. You know, everyone is sort of saying, look, he's more than just a golfer. He's a dad. He's a person. We're glad he's alive. And that's very, very true. I don't think, and I'm going to say this cautiously because I don't want to sound, you know, like I'm not respecting his humanity. But I don't think it's necessarily wrong to immediately, like a day or two later, not immediately, but a day or two later, to sort of process if he could play golf. Like, at the beginning, everyone should be glad he was alive. Everyone should be glad that that Charlie and Sam didn't lose a dad, you know, that family didn't lose a Tiger Woods, right? But afterwards, because he's a public figure and because he's an athlete and basically an entertainer, I don't think it's out of the realm of conversation to wonder what this injury is going to mean. We would do this with a lot of other athletes. We would do this with actors. We would do this with any other public figure. I mean, whatever you're famous for, we would wonder if you could continue doing what it is you became famous doing.
Let's be honest. We did it with Teddy Bridgewater and Alex Smith.
Sure, we did. Absolutely,
now,
we did.
We saw the injury and was like, oh, are they going to be able to play again?
Yeah, and I think there is, you know, look, immediately, yeah, it's a little bit too quick. But I think after a day or two, it is not out of the realm of reasonableness to say, hey, is this guy, what is this injury? A lot of us don't know. Like, a lot of us don't know. We hear these words, right? Crushed ankle. But, and yet, we think we have an idea, but we don't. We don't know. Like, a doctor could say, that's devastating. He'll never recover from it. Or he could say, yeah, we just put some rods in and he'll be fine. Well, I have no idea.
Like you just said, you know, thank God for modern medicine. I fully believe he'll be able to play again.
Sure. I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, I will have to take people's word for it. But again, when you're famous for something, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a politician, you're a writer, you're an actor, you're a musician. It's okay after something like that to wonder if that art that you do, whether it's hit a golf ball or play piano, is going to be in our lives anymore.
It's okay. It's not selfish. It's just that's just the way we know you. You know, we don't know Tiger Woods as a person. We think we know these people, but we don't. We don't share the same humanity relationship with these guys. We kind of think we do, but in the end, we don't. But here's the thing about the tributes yesterday, and I thought this was really poignant. You know, all the guys that were wearing red, you know, like Patrick Reed and Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, all those guys that were doing the tributes, none of them came up in golf fearing Tiger Woods. They never knew that moment of going to a tournament, looking up at this leaderboard and going, I've got a lot of work to do. I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'm not going to make it here if that's going to be the standard. I got to figure this out. They never had to do that because they grew up where the standard was already set. Like the standard of playing the way you play golf had already been set by this guy. Yesterday, Colin Morikawa won the World Golf Championships. Now, these are big tournaments, but they're not majors, but they're not your average PGA Tour stop either. They're kind of big deals, good field. He collected a check yesterday for winning that tournament for $1.8 million. Like, even when you adjust for inflation, if you go back 30 years, that doesn't exist. That doesn't even come close to the kind of money the guys were playing for back then. I mean, at most you'd make 100 grand, 180 grand if you won a golf tournament. Now you're making close to 2 million, and you're making 2 million at a golf tournament without fans, like no crowd. No roars and concessions and merchandise and everything else that goes into these tournaments. And that's all Tiger. That's all Tiger. He made the game cool. He made the game very, very profitable. And here's the other thing. You can be a PGA golfer now and never win and still make a fortune. I mean, an absolute fortune. You know, make some cuts, collect huge checks, and all of it was because of Tiger. Their tributes to Tiger are so different because they are the direct beneficiaries of a guy's work. I mean, everything that Tiger meant to the game, what he meant to the sporting world, what he meant to, I mean, look, he transcended his sport. He became a global figure, right? He became an athlete that was a golfer, but he was even much more than that. He sold the sport, but he mostly sold himself. And all of these guys that paid tribute to them became the beneficiaries of it. They all are playing for big money. They're playing golf in a way that's not the same way Phil Mickelson grew up playing, not the way David Duval grew up playing. You know, those guys, you know, Ernie Els grew up playing. Those guys, when they were coming up, felt like, okay, you play this certain way, you can win. You can be successful. And then Tiger comes and smashes that to pieces, destroys it. And then all of a sudden, everyone is scrambling, going, how am I going to have a Hall of Fame career if this is what this guy is going to? If this guy is going to come and play and shoot 12 under at Pebble Beach when no one's breaking par, how am I going to compete with this? And he gets better every week. He's getting better and better and better. How do I compete with this? The Tiger that feared guys, that made guys really question their game, you know, Rory never had to go through that. You know, they don't have that person. They never got that person. You Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed, name the young golfers, even Ricky Fowler to some extent. None of them had that Tiger Woods on Sunday going to beat the heck out of you and then just kind of rub it in and then leave and then go do it again next week. They didn't have that, but they certainly are thankful for everything that he did for the game of golf. It's such a different way, the way those guys view Tiger and the way the contemporaries of Tiger view Tiger, because I think Phil Mickelson is just a perfect example of this. I think you want to talk about a guy that, I don't want to say came at the wrong time, because Phil certainly made a lot of money, but Phil Mickelson should have double-digit majors, easily. He's one of the most gifted golfers to ever have played the game. His short game when he was coming up was second to nobody, even as a freshman and a sophomore at the University of Arizona State. I mean, he had PGA talent in college. He won a PGA Tour event in college with his golf coach caddying for him as an amateur. But he should have won multiple. He's won 3 Masters. He could have won 5. He should have won a number of PGAs. The British Open was one that he had to kind of get because he didn't have the game for it, then developed the game for it. But he also came at a time. He also came at a time where You know, we talk about this with Brady in the NFL, right? Like, there are teams that could have won more Super Bowls, but the Patriots were just too dominant in the AFC. Phil's time in the, on the PGA Tour just came when Tiger Woods was winning everything, and not only winning everything, dominating the sport. And Phil was a good rival, but he wasn't really a rival. He wasn't on that same level of Tiger. But even he had to admit he improved his game. He got things into his game because Tiger Woods forced him to do it. And the guys that were honoring him yesterday wearing the red shirts, they had already built that in. They already played the long ball. They knew what mattered the most in the sport. And that's why the numbers are great. That's why the scoring is great. That's why the talent is great. They knew Tiger was it. Tiger was the guy. I watched him playing as a kid. I went out there and tried to be like him, and now I've made it on the PGA Tour. So it was very, very nice to see. We'll talk more about that throughout the show today, but coming up next, it is still early, but I did get some Big Ten basketball in while I was laid up. Boy, I'll tell you right now, there's one team that is just driving me absolutely crazy because I can't get them out of my head. That's next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
A weak battery could leave you stranded, so don't take a chance. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, their professional parts people can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Are you ready for the conference tournaments? That gets started this week for some of the smaller conferences.
It's about time.
Like the Southland Conference Tournament, the SoCon, the OVC, the Ohio Valley, Missouri Valley. Those are going on this week. And the next week is going to be the big ones, all the big ones. So like the SEC, Big Ten, and whatnot. I'm excited.
Just keeping my fingers crossed because we didn't have so much luck last year.
I know. Listen, I know I've said this before, but every Thursday of the tournament, I go to a wings place and I eat wings and I have a big lunch and I have a salad and a wings and a drink and a dessert. And I mean, more wings. I mean, I just literally like sit there and enjoy. It's my kind of tradition. And I was so bummed I didn't get to do it last year. So bummed. By the way, Virginia Cavaliers, you're defending champs. So I know how long ago that felt. They're still your defending champions.
That's right.
In college basketball. So don't.
I thought you were going to bring up Virginia. You know, hey, you get to redeem yourself from losing to a 16 seed, but they did redeem themselves. I forgot about that.
That was the big story of 2019. Was them bouncing back and winning it all.
I don't remember back then.
I know exactly. They are the defending college basketball champions. So I was just flipping through the channels with nothing to do, no place to go. I watched a lot of Michigan. And boy, I love Michigan. Really like Michigan. This is a Gonzaga-Baylor year. I mean, both teams have been fantastic. I know Baylor just lost to Kansas. Gonzaga, because they play in a conference that they dominate, every year we do the Gonzaga thing where we're like, hey, Gonzaga's really good, but how good are they? We shouldn't do that anymore. Gonzaga's really good. It doesn't matter who they play. Let them wipe out their entire conference. I don't care. They're excellent. Baylor is excellent, despite their loss to Kansas. But Michigan has had a weird year because Michigan, there was almost a month that they had off because there was a shutdown in the state. So they stopped playing basketball and they had like a loss to Minnesota, which they beat Wisconsin and then lost to Minnesota. And they didn't really look all that great doing that. And so people were like, OK, Michigan's good. But, you know, hey, this is sort of Gonzaga. This is sort of Baylor. You know, there's a couple of other teams. But lately, Michigan has done everything that you want to do right when you go into the tournament. We hear a lot of things about the success of teams. You want good guard play. You want to be able to shoot from the outside. You want to be able to play tenacious defense. There's all these elements that people say, look, if you can put them all together, this would be the elements that you want for a team to make a run in the NCAA tournament. They've got all of that. They've got all of that. Their defense is one of the best in the country, if not the best in the country. Right. I mean, Hunter Dickinson shut down Luka Garza, the leading scorer, right? One of the favorites to win the Wooden Award the other night. I mean, they play fantastic defense. They shoot nearly 40% from threes. They can run the floor. They can play half court game. They can play post. They can play out. They're the way Juwan Howard has built this team. There's so many different things that they do well. And this isn't like master. What was that saying? A jack of all trades, master of none. Where Michigan is just good at good at a couple of things, but they're not dominant. They're dominant in a lot of these fields that you want to watch for a team going into the NCAA tournament. Now, I hope I didn't hex them, because we know one thing about this tournament. Those kind of formulas don't always play out. We've seen time and time and time and time and time again. The list is huge of teams that have headed into this thing with all of the box checked off, right? Again, great guards, good shooting, good defense, well-coached, senior-laden. You can list all the things that we always talk about when it comes to this tournament, and we see them out in the first round or the second round, where they don't even make it to the Sweet 16, or they get upset, or they get to the Final Four and they come up short. Whatever it is, we don't always see that sort of team win at all. But every time I've seen Michigan play, every time I've watched them, I've seen them play Ohio State, I saw them play Iowa. There's something about the way they play that reminds me of some of the better teams that I've seen win this whole thing. I mean, again, they are extremely well coached. Juwan Howard has done a fantastic job. Now, he's a guy that, and this goes against what I've always said, which is you don't necessarily need an alumni or somebody part of your old program to become your coach. I never really like it when schools lean in that direction, because he's not always the best guy that's available. You should always try to take the best guy that's available. Oh, some cases it works. Jim Boeheim has certainly done a fantastic job coaching his alma mater. But in this case, it's worked really, really well. I mean, he's been fantastic. And this team is, I think, I'm really looking forward to see how they close out the season and how they play in the tournament. But I'm not going to put any weight on what happens to them at the Big Ten tournament. If they don't win it, I don't care. I'm still going to have them as my favorite to win it all. If, again, all of these elements come to play in the tournament, they have been fantastic. And by the way, the Big Ten is great. I mean, the basketball is really good. I mean, the Ohio State, I know they lost to Iowa yesterday. Ohio State is in the top 10. Iowa's got the best player in college basketball in Luka Garza. Illinois is playing very good. Michigan, as I mentioned earlier, it's a great, great conference. It's, you know, when you talk about the downward kind of slide of the ACC this year, with some of the teams, not the blue bloods, not being able to pop up. I mean, even Michigan State has kind of played better. You know, everyone's kind of been buzzing about Tom Izzo, and I think they just lost, but nevertheless, Izzo does this thing. If he can just get in, he does great in the tournament. That's always been Izzo's calling card. No matter what kind of team he puts together, he always gets them in. But the Big Ten has been living up to all of the preseason conversation about that conference. They've done a fantastic job. Now, this still may be a Baylor-Gonzaga show in the NCAA tournament. Those teams are excellent. Again, I know Baylor just lost, and Gonzaga's still unbeaten. But I'm falling in love with Michigan. I can't wait. I'm really excited. It feels different because we didn't have it last year. I feel like I'm getting more energetic for it, because we were totally like, one day it was coming and the next day it was gone and it was all over and it was that quick. But remember too, last year we didn't have anything to process the pandemic, right? We didn't know what it was. We didn't know how it was going to affect us. It seemed a little surprising. We were a little scared of it. We were a little unsure about it. Conference tournaments, it was like, well, can they do it? Can they just play without any fans? Can they still put this together? And remember, even you and I were talking about this last March, which was, there's no way they're going to cancel this cash cow, right?
No.
I mean, this is nine figures. What are we talking about? There's no way they're going to force those kids to play basketball.
It's almost virtually impossible to do it.
Right. And then they said, no, we're
they
done.
Did.
They did. They shut it down.
Well, they canceled the conference tournaments. Like, okay, well, you know.
Yeah, that was one thing.
Cancel the conference tournaments. We can still seed everybody.
It was almost like I felt at the time, this is how kind of naive I was back then. But again, I had nothing to go by. I kind of thought, well, you cancel the conference tournaments and then calm down. Right? Like,
right.
No more basketball. Let's slow down. Let's come up with a plan for this going forward. Even if we have to scrap the regions, even if we're playing in one location, but let's get everybody back to some safe spot and then talk about how we're going to do the tournament. Because I really didn't think they would cancel the tournament. Like, and then when they did, you realize this is big deal. This is really affecting sports in a way that we don't know where it was going. So maybe my enthusiasm for the tournament is because, my God, it's been 2 years since we've seen it. All right, we continue with Wake Up Call. Coming up, that 17-game schedule could be really interesting, but we'll also talk about Russell Wilson in Seattle next.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's as we roll along. All right, so there were a couple of things, again, I missed when I was out for the 3 days recovering from surgery. The one story that I still could not believe was getting more and more legs was this Russell Wilson-Seattle divorce that could happen. And we've been spending so much time this offseason since the Super Bowl, right? So now we're heading into the offseason and the draft and all of that, that we spent a lot of time talking about Deshaun Watson and what's happening there, right? Will the Texans actually trade Deshaun Watson? Will Nick Caserio actually give in to the demand of Deshaun Watson, who wanted a say in the way the organization was hiring a head coach and hiring a GM and didn't get it? Now he's angry and now he wants out. And he's got some support from people who are saying, yeah, like, let him go. And now we're talking about another superstar quarterback that's got some problems within his organization demanding a trade or putting in the works to be traded. And what are the odds that those two are actually going to take place? Right? I mean, to me, the Seattle situation, and the Athletic has a great story on it, by the way, just really details some of the problems that Wilson's had. He left an offensive meeting because he's wanted some input. He's really tired of getting hit. He's really tired of getting sacked. He's one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the league. He's tired of them not building around an offensive line. And this might be two things. One, his complete desire to cut ties with Seattle and just go on somewhere else. Or two, using it as sort of leverage to get his point across so that the organization wakes up and realizes, hey, maybe we should be listening to this guy a little bit more. Maybe he should have a little bit more input. Maybe he should actually have a conversation on what he might want, what he is looking forward to, you know, in terms of getting certain players or whatnot. And I said this with Deshaun Watson, and I'll say it again with Russell Wilson. You do have to be a little careful. These are superstar players. They're superstar quarterbacks. They're very rare to find, but you don't always give them keys to the kingdom. You know, I mean, look, the Texans are at fault because they promised Deshaun Watson a seat at the table and a conversation with him about where the organization was going to go front office-wise and in the head coaching position. That's on them. If they've done that, then they've done that. They owe that to Deshaun Watson if they've promised him that. But Wilson is trying to get his word out to say, hey, listen, can you listen to me for a second? I think we should be doing this, this, and this offensively. And I also think we need to do this, this, and this personnel-wise so I'm not on my back constantly and at risk at every single play of having my career ended. And that's legitimate. I mean, that's a legitimate gripe that a quarterback would have. But you want to be careful because if you give a little, you might end up giving a lot. And in the end, you don't want quarterbacks running the organization. That's not why they're hired. That's not why they're there. I mean, you may have a person that is one of 15, 16, 17 people on the globe that can be a legitimate superstar NFL quarterback in his time. But that doesn't mean he gets to run everything. It doesn't mean he gets to have a say in everything and then use the threat of not playing as a sort of way to sort of get you to capitulate to his demands. I just don't think an organization is run well if it does that. So you can see the Seahawks kind of going, yeah, all right, we're listening, but like, come on, like we're not going to sign everybody that you like, or we're not going to draft the people you like just because you're one of the elite quarterbacks in this league and one of the most important positions in all of sports. But it also reminds me, I mean, have you ever had a friend who's in a relationship and they're getting a divorce and you kind of, you know, talk to your buddy about it and you find out that the reason they're getting divorced seems a little bit petty? Like, you feel like that could be worked out. Like, it's not infidelity or it's not domestic violence or anything like serious. It's like, just, oh, she's annoying when she chews. or he's annoying when he spends time in the garage building things. Like, that's something you could work out. Like, why are we breaking this down? That's the way I feel about the Seahawks. I'm a little bit different about Deshaun Watson in Houston. I feel like that bridge is starting to really burn between those two, right? Watson is already saying, I'm not playing. And I'm having conversations with David Culley. I'm not playing. But it feels like the Seattle situation is very repairable. If you're the Seahawks, why would you let him go for any reason at all? When what he's saying would make sense. Like, for everything that we may comment about Pete Carroll, does Pete Carroll really believe that the best way to run the Seahawks offense is to have a makeshift offensive line that puts his quarterback in danger every snap? Like, in all likelihood, that's not the way Pete Carroll wants his offense to look like. Like, he's not arguing against that thought. Like, when Russell Wilson says, hey, I'm getting hit a lot and I'm really tired of it. If I'm Pete Carroll, I say, and me too. I'm getting sick of you getting hit a lot too. I'm going to try to fix it. We're going to try to repair this. Because, yeah, in the end, if you go down, we go down. Like, we may love our backup quarterback, and we'll publicly say so, but in these rooms and these four walls, we're dead. Like, we're not going to win games. It's over. We need to keep you healthy.
Don't you feel like we live in a la-la NFL offseason
completely
world right now?
I'm having conversations about quarterbacks and their teams that I've never had ever.
What? You know what? At this point,
superstar quarterbacks that are demanding trades because they just don't like things.
I think at this point, why not just put Mahomes on the trading block?
Right.
Because you know what? He couldn't win it with no offensive line in the Super Bowl. Let's just get rid of him.
Like, what if Patrick Mahomes wants everything? What if Patrick Mahomes wants everything flavored bagels at meetings and they go, no, sesame, that's all we want. That's all we're getting. And he's just going to scream that he wants to get traded to John Gruden's Raiders.
Yeah. Because they allow everything.
Like, seriously, I brought this up at the top of the hour. So now his agent's got a list of teams that Wilson is willing to go to.
But, you know, doesn't want to be traded.
Doesn't want to be traded, but here are four places he wouldn't mind going. I was saying this earlier. This is like having an argument with your wife and she brings home apartment rentals. Like, you start, like, wait a minute, hold on, really? Like, you're actually talking about living in another place?
We just unpacked the last box.
Right? You really, like it's escalating to a point now where you're looking at other locations to live? Like, this isn't a chance for the two sides to sit down in Seattle and hash this out. He's already like, Miami, the Cowboys, the Bears. Like, what are we talking about here with Russell Wilson? The Raiders. Are you serious? Like, we're at that point. This can't be salvaged. Like, seriously? I mean, it's to the fact that we have two quarterbacks this offseason that could star quarterbacks, superstar quarterbacks.
Superstar. That's the thing.
Superstar. Top five.
Yes, top five.
MVP level play.
For the first half of the season for one of the guys.
At least for first half for one of the guys. Both of them could end up in different uniforms because they just didn't like what was going on with their team. Like, what are we doing here? Like, if you can't...
When that news first came across, you know, I thought it was like, all right, you know, it's just someone who decided to create a trade rumor and it got some legs under it.
Right.
We see that all the time.
All the time.
But then, you know, when Russell Wilson came out and confirmed it, it was like, okay, what is going on in the NFL? What I suspect what it is that because you see this type of action in the NBA all the time.
You know, exactly.
We saw it with James Harden recently where he's like, I just don't want to be here anymore. Man, I'm just not going to practice.
Carmelo Anthony in Denver every night.
You saw with Carmelo? Yeah, just like, I'm just not really going to practice. I'm not going to really push myself out there. You know what? I'm sick today type of thing. I mean, you know, it's just one thing after another. And it kind of forces the hand of the owner saying, you know what, well, let's see what we can get for him. Oh, we can get a whole lot. Let's make the move.
Yeah. And this has got to scare general managers around the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, am I seriously in a position where I'm going to be held hostage? My team, we're going to be held hostage as an organization.
Yeah.
If I sign my quarterback and he just doesn't like the way we do business.
And we've seen it with other position players. We saw most recently, I think the biggest one, I think most recently was Le'Veon Bell.
Right.
You know, where Le'Veon Bell was just like, I just need out of here and sat out the entire season. But never would we think it would happen to a quarterback.
Never. I mean, I still am like, I still can't. maybe it's my age, been covering this league a long time. I still can't put my brain around the idea of Deshaun Watson saying, I'm not playing for a year.
Yeah.
Like, I will not, I will stand on this hill.
No way he could sit out, right? There's no way.
Right, there's no way. There's after, you would reach a point where you would say, I can't, I have to play. I hate it, but I'm losing this war. But again, if you're a general manager, look, think about Nick Caserio for a second, right? He, last year, they wanted to hire him. They couldn't, so there was some tampering problems. But in the end, they got their guy. And he comes into Houston, and what could be the two big things that he – three things, three big things that could have happened under his watch. J.J. Watt demanding a release, getting a release, hiring David Culley, a man with no experience in the NFL as a head coach, but not even on anybody's radar. It's okay. Like, Eric Bieniemy was at least on the radar of new hires. And then Deshaun – trading Deshaun Watson? Could those three things occur within the first 6 months of his tenure in Houston? Like, be careful what you wish for. He's probably been dying to be a general manager for the last few years. Couldn't wait to kind of, you know, knew he was on that trajectory, getting talked about glowingly around the league, feeling like the time was coming where the phone was going to ring with opportunities to interview and get hired. And then he goes to Houston, and these three horrible things, horrible decisions slash forced to make a decision, could be falling on his watch. If you're a general manager in this league, the idea that both of these guys, What is at the core of both of these guys' problems? They wanted input, right? They wanted input. They're not tired of the city. They're not tired of the coach. They're not in a way like, I just don't get along with them anymore. It's nothing. They both want their voices heard. They both want to have a say in how the organization is run in whatever capacity that may be. As I said earlier with Deshaun Watson, I think it's a little insane to have told a young quarterback, you know, that you would get a seat at the table for the general manager hiring. That seems nuts to me. And maybe the coach, I can see a little bit of the coach. We could talk to you about the head coach. But the general manager, you've got to separate those two camps, because the general manager is supposed to be making some hard decisions. And some of those hard decisions could be based on you down the road. So you want to separate those two. And the idea that the Texans did this, and again, this is no fault of Deshaun Watson. If you were made a promise, if I was made a promise, if anybody was made, anybody of you out there made a promise and your company or business didn't keep it, you'd have every right to be ticked off, of course. And Wilson, I can see him saying, hey, can you guys listen to me? We need an offensive line here. I'm tired of this. So why isn't Pete Carroll going, of course? Yes. So let's nip this in the bud and let's stop this nonsense where your agent is putting out four teams you'd like to play for. What is that? It's crazy. I'm telling you, Ron, if these two go down, I'm not kidding. If these two go down, I will. Right. I will never say there are any absolutes in this league.
No, I 100% agree with you.
Every little thing I believe that will never happen will happen.
Like I just said, I mean, you know, if those two go down, then we have to admit Patrick Mahomes won't be a lifer with the Chiefs.
That's right. Exactly. It's all on the table. Every possibility is on the table. When you used to say that could never happen in the NFL the way it's structured.
I mean,
stop, because it's going to happen.
You know, we expect scenarios like a Tom Brady last year.
Sure.
You know,
we saw it coming.
In the twilight of his career, just kind of runs its course. You know, usually there's a quarterback waiting, you know, like, you know, with Joe Montana or with Brett Favre, that there was a quarterback up and coming that they had someone in place and they were just wanting to go younger. That's usually the organization's determination. Tom Brady left on his own accord, and we're still like, you know what? Yeah, that kind of makes sense. But this, I mean, you're talking two top five quarterbacks easily.
Exactly. I mean, and Wilson's in his 30s, but still got gas in the tank. Right?
Yes.
And Watson is one of the best young quarterbacks in the league with miles to go before he sleeps. And yet we may be talking about them in different uniforms. This is insane.
Yeah.
Insane. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family. Rocket Ken. All right, coming up next hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. I'm really looking forward to it because I know that I missed it for the last 3 days last week. So
yeah.
We had a weekend of good,
you know what?
Fun stories. What?
Rest of America missed it too.
Oh, really? You guys didn't do
those?
There was
a little bit of on a hiatus. Well,
all right. Well,
Wednesday,
then you have a lot
Wednesday,
of stuff to pack in.
Denton Day, avid listener of the show, requested it. So we did one.
Oh, very good.
And I'm bringing one of the things that we talked about to you because I need to get your opinion on it.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, by the way, hi, Denton Day. Thanks for filling in for me on Wednesday if you are listening.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. We'll also talk about the 17-week schedule. Now, listen, I know we've done this before, but Peter King's column this morning talked about some of the nuances of what would happen if this actually takes place in 2021. So we'll go over that because it's actually kind of got some like little perks for us football fans for this upcoming season, if that's the case. Boy, I'll tell you right now, if I never thought that would happen either. Remember we talked about Watson and Wilson?
Yes.
I didn't think we'd ever see 17 games. The world is turning upside down in front of me, and I can't cope. I can't catch up with how the life is changing. Tony La Russa is in the managerial box at the with the White Sox. What are we doing? Am I going to wake up any moment, and this is all a dream?
Well, you did go under the knife the other day, so maybe this is an alternate reality that you weren't prepared for. Maybe you are still asleep.
You know what's funny? Maybe if the surgeon had said, by the way, Tony La Russa isn't managing at all. In fact, he's well-retired. Then I would have said, oh, because I had this crazy dream. He was the manager of the White Sox of all teams. You know, like he was in the late 70s. Stupid me. I know that's silly. Yeah.
And then you wake up to a former wife. Just like Bob Newhart.
Right. Exactly. Suzanne Plachette is next to me. Oh, Tony, don't be so silly. Oh, goodness. Tony La Russa. God love you. All right. We'll continue along. It is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.